So it was a few years later when I arrived to a house sitting job in the Caribbean that I personally learned what dengue fever is like.
On this episode, we're going to talk about the foodborne illness, aka bad acid trip, called ciguatera, that makes hot things feel and taste cold and cold things feel and taste hot. Since one disease is not enough, we're also going to talk about dengue fever. Things are about to get hot, or maybe it might feel cold while it's actually hot. So fuck it. Just bring your thermometer.
You're listening to the Travel Horror Stories Podcast, a show that listens to real stories from travel bloggers and travelers just like you. Then we unpack those stories to discuss safety tricks, prevention treats, horror hacks, and follow-up tactics. The goal is to turn travel nightmares into dreams of beaches, sunshine, and margaritas.
And as always, you can head over to TravelHorrorStoriesPodcast.com for this and all the previous episodes, their show notes, and links to all the other places you enjoy listening to podcasts. If you're listening via Apple Podcasts, don't forget to give the episode a 5-star rating and leave a comment, because that will help more people find the show.
And now, live from the Rudderless Travel Studio in downtown Toronto, Canada, here's your host, Christopher Rudder!
Alrighty, welcome to another episode of the Travel Horror Stories Podcast. Welcome to April, and if you are here in Canada, welcome to spring. And I don't even know if I want to talk about the weather.
So one of the things that's interesting about Canadians and weather, and it might actually be more of a Torontonian thing, but I'm not sure. It's kind of weird because we live in a climate with four seasons, and yet it seems that there's only two. And it's either it's about to get really hot or it's about to get really cold. That's it. That's all it is. Actually, it's either too hot or too cold, or it's about to get really hot or it's about to get really cold. It's never perfect. There's always something wrong with the weather.
You know what's funny is that I would even argue to say that there's three, because the third one is construction. That season is always going on. So it's either hot, cold, or construction, because construction seems to be going on in the summer, in the winter, whenever. And I mean, I'm in the downtown core, and I mean, there's no shortage of construction and cranes and all kinds of stuff all over the place. So construction is the other one.
I actually heard that there are more cranes in Toronto, at least pre-pandemic. I'm not sure what the case is right now, but there are more cranes in Toronto than there are anywhere else in the world.
Well, you know,
I don't know if that's like cumulative or if that's just in general, but I know, I mean, Toronto is the money laundering capital of the world. For some reason, I find this a badge of pride. So it stands to reason that there's going to be a lot of cranes for construction, but it's the road construction that gets me. I mean, I lost years of my life in Toronto traffic. That's part of the reason why I actually sold everything. I was like, I'm out. I can't do this. I'm going to die, live and die on the roads.
So, and according to your plan, you thought that you'd be gone 12 years and come back and this shit would be done, right? But wrong. Nope. It got
only
worse.
Just begun.
Yeah, exactly. I read somewhere that it actually takes an hour to get from Toronto to Toronto.
And that's on a good day.
That's on a good day. Exactly. And you know what? That's quite frankly, that's true. So, speaking of the weather, the weather outside right now is, it's actually not
shit.
Too bad. I mean, exactly. I'm trying to be positive, but let's be real. I mean,
we're having a terrible spring. It's terrible. It's like last year. Last year we went from winter to summer, and summer happened on June 15th, and it was just winter right until then. I remember this very well. The only difference is this year, the same thing is happening, except it doesn't really matter to us because we're all inside.
Exactly. And that's what I've been saying for the past couple of episodes. And in a weird way, I'm actually saying that, you know, it's actually not bad that it sucks outside because we can't go outside to enjoy it anyways.
Exactly. So, you know, I feel so much better about my life when it's shit outside.
That's right. This is life in Canada. This is literally what we talk about. We talk about the weather. That's why I made it such a prominent part of this show, because it's 100% truly Canadian. It's exactly what we talk about all the time. So that's what it's like outside. I was trying to be nice. Nora's being real.
and somewhere in between the two of us is the truth.
Exactly. So you can figure it out. But what the truth is that I'm so happy that you guys are tuning in. So whenever it's the fifth episode, you know what that means. We all get excited. I get super amped because I know that my good friend Nora is in the house with me. So we get to delve into another one of her stories. But before we talk about who Nora is, if for some strange reason you haven't been paying attention, this episode is the third installment of a five-part series based on Nora's blog post called Brace Yourself, Travel Isn't All Roses and Lollipops. Ain't that the truth? And you'll find that blog post on her blog, The Professional Hobo. It's a great read, which I've linked to in the show notes. Be sure to check out episode 15 and episode 20, which talk about Nora's experiences with the Australian bushfires and breaking up while abroad. With me, once again, riding co-pilot in my rudderless ship is Miss Nora Dunn. How you doing, Nora?
I'm fabulous. And once again, it is a pleasure to be here riffing with you on all the crappy stuff that can happen when we travel.
Exactly. And I mean, you're the one who takes the cake on that. These whenever I get to hang out with you, it's one of those things where I mean, it's for my blog. The podcast is all for my blog. It's all part of my brand and everything. So technically it should be work, but it never ever feels like I'm working when I'm doing these podcasts and having fun. So thank you for that, because it has a lot to do with you. And it's almost like, and you know, if you ever catch Nora and I at an actual event, this is just exactly how we behave in real life. Like, we're constantly
except
riffing.
Except there's alcohol involved.
Except for there's alcohol involved. There might be alcohol involved now. You don't know because you can't see. But but we're constantly, it's like a comedy show. Like, it's constantly we're riffing off of each other. And it's so much fun. It really, truly, and genuinely is. You're so much fun, Nora. It really is. And I really appreciate you coming back and doing these reoccurring episodes, because they're lots of fun. And you have a lot to offer and a lot to give, because, you know, I don't know much people who can say they've been traveling full time for, you know, 12 years. So, you know, kudos to you.
I wish they gave out awards for that kind of thing, because, yeah, I'd like an award. Yeah, I need something to show for this other than, you know, scars and diseases and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. which is the perfect segue. We'll get there in a second. And the Oscar goes to Nora Dunn for The Professional Hobo. Nora, tell us all about your blog, please.
Well, it just so happens that in 2006, I did the strangest thing that anyone could do in 2006. I sold everything I owned, which included a large financial planning practice, in order to seize my lifelong dream of traveling the world. I did not know at the time that I would actually last 12 years. There was a part of me that thought I might last 12 days, maybe 12 months before going, okay, that was fun, and kind of closing that chapter of my life. But alas, 12 years later, I did return to my hometown, which again, I never thought I would do, set up a home base from which I continued to travel for about 6 months of every year. Again, that's kind of pandemic notwithstanding. We are currently grounded at the moment. We may not be grounded when this airs. I certainly hope we won't be grounded when this airs. But certainly we are entering a new era of travel. And I have to say, there's a part of me, I mean, I'm sharing five of my travel horror stories with you today. And what I'm actually really grateful for is the fact that I'm not on the road at the moment. Because then we might have to go for six. And so I feel like karmically I've paid my debt in terms of travel horror stories. And I was lucky enough to make it back to my home base before everything shut down. So hashtag silver linings on that one.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm 100% confident that that we're not seeing the last of Nora, that's for sure, on this show specifically. And I don't, I mean, I hope, of course, I hope that nothing bad happens to you. But if it does, you know where to come.
I know your motives. Now if something bad happens to me, I'm calling you. Yeah. Like, Christopher, anyway, you made this happen.
Want to talk about it?
Speak into the microphone, please.
Yes, exactly. All right. So since we're all having fun, let's play our game. I think, what's the score?
We're even.
I think we're even. Oh no. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're going to play three stories, two truths, one lie. Nora's going to give me three stories. Two of them are going to be true. One of them is going to be a lie. And I'm going to try to guess which one is a lie. For the record, we are one apiece. So let's see how this goes down.
All right. So my theme of the day, because I have to break this down into themes. I'm afraid, actually, on the first day, I blew my wad, unfortunately, because I came up with like three completely outlandish stories, but they had no theme except that they were all outlandish. And then I realized I had to come up with a whole bunch more stories. And so now I have to theme them. So the theme today is going to be animals. And in fact, actually, I have way more than three animal stories to share with you, but I will choose just three in the hopes that you will not know which one is a slight deterrent from the truth.
Oh, man.
Animal story number one. I once milked goats as my job. Animal story number two. I was chased by a bear in the Rocky Mountains. Animal story number three, I ate moray eel and got a disease.
Oh, man. Okay. Okay, you know what? I'm going to try to apply a little bit of logic, which doesn't happen too often. I'm going to go with you being chased by a bear as a lie, only because it wasn't any one of the initial travel horror stories that you ever proposed to me, because I'm pretty sure that would have ended up on a travel horror story if you're being chased by a bear. So I'm going to go with the bear story as a lie.
Well, ding, 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 ding. You are right. The reason I chose that as my fib was because I wasn't chased by a bear, but I thought I was being chased by a bear.
Oh, no.
I was on a mountaineering expedition in the Rocky Mountains of Alberta with a bunch of friends. We just finished a long day, and I was walking from the bathroom back to the campsite, and a friend decided to play a trick on me because he knew I was skittish about the idea of running into bears, and he pretended to be a bear. Now, I was with my boyfriend at the time, and here's the problem. So this instinct, that whole human instinct, that fight or flight thing, that's real. Because I was with my boyfriend at the time when our friend jumped out and pretended to be a bear. And I learned that my instinct is to fly, because I ran. I ran and left my boyfriend to be eaten by the bear. And I'm pleased to say that he gallantly stood his ground to be eaten by said bear before he realized that we were being tricked on. So,
wow, good on him. way to stand by your woman.
Yeah, that's it.
I'll take it. You get away and be safe. I love you.
The awesome. Irony being, of course, actually, he stood the greater chance of surviving by getting big and getting noisy. The first thing a bear wants to do is chase after something. So running away was the stupidest thing I could have done. But luckily, he was standing in my way. So, or in the bear's way. The fictitious bear's way.
All right, so you've milked goats. I don't know. Nowadays, the more, you know, I knew you really well before, but doing a lot of these episodes, I'm really getting to know you more. And for me, milking goats just sounds like something that Nora would do. I'm not even going to lie. It just literally sounds like something that Nora would do. So I go, if she's lying about that, I doubt it. That just sounds something she would do. So, and then the other story was you getting sick by eating seal, right?
Moray eel.
Okay. So, briefly go into the eel story and then go into the goat story?
Well, actually, I'm going to save the eel story for last because that's a segue into one of the many diseases I've suffered from while traveling.
Perfect.
That's why I chose that story today.
Uh-huh. Excellent.
The milking goats happened because shortly into my full-time travels, I discovered a really nifty thing, a really nifty way to travel the world in a very immersive and culturally rewarding way, but also a very financially awarding way in that I learned how to get accommodation for free. And over the years, I actually learned how to get accommodation for free around the world in 5 different ways. It became the topic of a book, shameless self-promotion right here. How to Get Free Accommodation on the Road is available for purchase at theprofessionalhobo.com. And the first way that I got free accommodation around the world was I was living and volunteering on a permaculture property in Hawaii. It was the first volunteer gig I'd ever done, but basically you volunteer for a few hours a day in trade for a free place to stay. This was a completely off-grid place. I had my own yurt that didn't have doors or windows because you didn't need it in such a remote place as where I was in this little corner of Hawaii.
Wow.
Looking across 150 yards of hardened lava that led to a 30-foot cliff with gigantic ocean waves crashing against it.
Oh my gosh, wow.
And that was my TV. And my job was to milk the goats every day. And that was what I did in trade for free accommodation. I learned so much about goats. Not only the fact that they have really creepy eyes, but they've got bold personalities. And once you get a goat in your clothing, the smell never goes away. It doesn't matter how many times you wash that shirt, you will always smell like goat.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. How's that for learning something?
See, this is educational too.
Totally educational. That's amazing. You know what? I would, for views like that, I would milk as many goats as you need me to milk. Straight up.
They're ornery. They're very ornery, but they are amusing.
And I'm sure you have a blog post about that. So
actually, one of the I made a video about milking goats.
All right.
And it went viral on YouTube.
Ah, wicked. Okay, so send me the link later. I'll put it in the show notes.
So great. Okay. Today, we've predetermined that I'm going to discuss my various diseases that I got while traveling the world. The squeamish may not like everything that I have to share today.
Oh, no.
And I mean, let's get it right. I mean, I've had 3 diseases, like 3 proper diseases that I'm willing to talk about today. But I also too, I mean, I think we just need to get something out there. Being sick on the road is probably one of the worst feelings. It is because you're not in your element. You're rarely, if ever, in a really comfortable place to be sick. Because the first thing you need when you're sick is to be comfortable. You want to be comfortable being miserable. And if you're staying in some place you're not familiar with, being sick solo is, I mean, if being sick with somebody is bad, being sick solo is 10 times worse. Because then there's nobody to help you when you can't do the things you need to do. Like eat and survive and whatnot. So definitely lots of challenges. And certainly post all of these diseases, I lived in Peru for a few years and I learned the hard way that the water is not drinkable. I never drank the water, but I still got multiple bouts of waterborne parasites and bacteria that led to very unsavory experiences of the gastrointestinal variety.
Wow.
But another story. that pales in comparison to what we'll be talking about today.
Please stop. I was just going to say that's not even part of the stories you're talking about today. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
That's just a precursor. That's a teaser.
Yeah. You remember how I said before that we could definitely have you back like 8 million times? Like, yeah. So there you go.
Well, and this is a universal, I mean, being sick in general, being sick while traveling, this is a universal thing. This is a universal plight. Like, so while my stories of disease may be a little bit oh, I don't know, a little more technicolor than most people will experience while traveling, it's still something that's very relatable. So we can all suffer in solidarity. This is great. Yay. Let's be sick together.
Suffer in isolation.
Yes, exactly. Solidarity and isolation. There's that too.
There you go.
So the first illness, the first disease that I was actually pretty happy to get this because I was collecting travel experiences when it happened. So, you know, when it happened, I was like, ding, travel disease, check. Little did I know that the two more were coming down the way. But it happened when I ate moray eel.
Oh, no.
Now, my boyfriend at the time and I were living in a hostel in Hawaii. So I'd already finished the milk and goats experience on the very rugged side of Hawaii. And I needed to get the goat out of my life and my clothes. So we moved to the other side of the island, which was like a stark contrast to that of permaculture. It was the Kona side of the island, of the big island of Hawaii. There's restaurants and hostels and hotels and all kinds of action lining the coast. And so we were living and volunteering and trade for free accommodation at a hostel. I was actually painting murals in trade for my accommodation.
Painting murals?
I was painting murals all around the hostel in trade for my accommodation. Yeah, no, I don't do anything small measures. No, don't ask me to clean or change sheets or something. No. I'm a paint murals. And to this day, the entire front wall of the hostel has this gigantic caricaturized picture of the Big Island of Hawaii and my signature at the bottom right-hand corner.
Wow.
I didn't even know I could paint when I started doing this, so that was kind of an interesting discovery. Oh my,
you know that we stopped playing the game, right? Are we still lying here? What's happening? No, I'm just joking.
So while we're living the good life in Hawaii, my boyfriend decides he wants to get into spearfishing. And so he starts making, you know, he gets a mask and flippers and a little spear gun and goes down regularly and does his little spear fishing thing. Once or twice I went with him and then realized that it's not a team sport because he would regularly, he had a bag. So basically when you go spear fishing, you're going to catch ideally many things. So then you've got to have a way to, you know, once you've speared them, you kind of attach them to a bag or something that's floating behind you. So then that way, when the sharks smell the blood, they don't eat you. They just eat the stuff you speared, which is floating 10 feet behind you.
Wow.
The problem being, I couldn't keep, you know, because I had my own snorkel and mask and I'm looking at stuff and, you know, swimming around and he's, you know, looking at stuff and swimming around. He'll regularly just veer off in a direction and suddenly I'll feel something by my head and it's dead fish that were floating behind him, right? So his stuff is at my head and now the sharks are going to eat me. So I was over it. I'm like, okay, now you go spearfishing on your own, hon. That's good. Yeah. Uh-huh. Get dinner.
Just get dinner.
Now, it's also, I think I'm also going to just take a slight tangent and move to the right to describe some of our roommates when we were living at the hostel. There were about five of us who were living at this hostel and six of us who were living at the hostel and working in trade for accommodation. And one of these people was a woman who was a marine biologist. She'd recently gotten out of school and she was in addition to living and working at the hostel, she was doing leading snorkeling tours and working for a company, doing such things. And she had a real love of ocean life. She also didn't like the fact that we were eating the creatures therein. And so she would regularly say, "You better watch out for ciguatera. You're going to get sick. You're going to get sick from eating these things you're catching. This is not good." And we always kind of dismissed her warnings as, yeah, you're all kind of like marine biologists, you know, vegan, you know, oh, don't hurt my sea brethren. It's, you know, so I didn't really pay much attention to her when she said this. And one day, my boyfriend comes home with the bounty to end all bounties. He's got, his spear is full of all these different kinds of fish and this gigantic 3-foot eel, a moray eel that he managed to catch.
Whoa.
He's really proud of this. He's really like, he did this. And so, you know, he's beating his chest when he hands me all this fish to get ready to cook. And I'm like, I don't even know if we can eat this. Like, is this edible? So I got to look up moray eel. And
first of all,
I had to identify it as a moray eel, which was a challenge. And then I had to figure out how to get it ready and cook it.
Wow.
Which I did, much to the fascination of my compadres at the hostel. So then the story continues. And moray eel is okay, by the way. It's not great, but, you know, it's good. But the story continues a few days later. When I go to the fridge to pour myself a cup of iced tea, we had jugs, big jugs of iced tea in the fridge. So I grab the jug that's been in the fridge for ages of iced tea, and I almost drop it because it's so hot. It's boiling hot. And I'm like, this is, and then I look at it and there's condensation on it. I'm like, no, it's cold. It's definitely cold. And I put it down. I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird. And then I poured it and I tasted it and it tasted like hot tea. I was tasting cold as hot.
What the hell?
And I'm like, oh, this is really weird, you know? And then, so then I start, I'm like, I wonder if that works with cold things, hot things too, right? So I try something hot and it tastes cold. And I'm like, this is kind of weird. Right. And then suddenly, and I don't know why, suddenly our roommate's voice comes in. You better be careful about ciguatera. It's a brain disease. You're going to get, you know, you're going to get messed up. And I'm like, brain disease.
Oh, no.
So I start looking it up. First of all, I have to figure out how to spell ciguatera. And then I have to look it up. And this is one of the symptoms. So ciguatera is a disease you get from eating sea creatures that eat a certain type of algae on shallow water reefs.
Oh my gosh.
and I don't remember the specifics enough to remember if it's like contaminated algae or what causes it or how it happens. But I do. The good news is it's a fairly benign disease to have. The prognosis is simply that, you know, you may experience a few months of hot is cold and cold is hot. There can be some gastrointestinal distress, which of course there was because, you know, it wouldn't be a good story if it didn't involve some pooping. it was really just kind of more exciting. Like for me, it was a badge of honor because I was like, damn, I did this. I got a tropical disease. Yeah. And I was pleased for this. Needless to say, I put the kibosh on the spear fishing. That was it. After that, we were done. And I was like, "This is perfect. I got away scot free. This is the best possible disease I could ever have gotten. The discomfort was minimal, and yet still, I could say I had a disease." And boom, I was like, "Great, one and done. Perfect."
Congratulations,
dun, dun, dun.
On getting your first disease.
Little did I know that it was not one and done.
Oh no. Oh my gosh.
So wow. That really isn't a horror story. That's just a fun story.
You know what? It's still something that could happen. I mean, what's the worst that sickness can be?
You could die. Totally.
Ciguatera.
Ciguatera. Yeah, I believe you can die. It is possible, but it's remote. Yeah, I mean, you know, I probably would be eaten by a shark before I would die of ciguatera. But, you know, with all diseases come a certain amount of, you know, calculated risk. So, you know, I survived. Woo.
Okay, but I mean, I should save all these questions for the end. But did you have to take any kind of antibiotics or something for it? Or was it just you, like, waited out?
Yeah, it just has to run its course.
Oh, okay.
So.
Alrighty.
Yeah, easy peasy. Easy peasy. One and done. But not.
All right. Congratulations on your first disease. All right.
Excellent. Excellent.
Usually when I go traveling, you know, I'm looking for beer and different things. I'm not looking for a disease, but each his own. Carry on.
Well, you know, I like hunting for interesting experiences, and that was certainly an interesting experience.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, less than a year later, my boyfriend, this is 1A, this is another little tangent, and I'm not going to go far into this one, but we were in Thailand, and my boyfriend got dengue fever.
Okay.
And he spent the next week in a hospital fighting for his life. Nurses round the clock coming in, taking blood, checking his platelet count and whatnot. Ironically, the hospital room is actually the nicest accommodation we had in all of Thailand. It was great. It had Wi-Fi. I had a couch to sleep on. He had, yeah, I mean, he had people waiting on him hand and foot, including me. So, I mean, all things considered, wow. You know, it was pretty good. But the circumstances were certainly a little rough. And I certainly learned firsthand what it's like to file a travel insurance claim. And I have many articles about how not to file a travel insurance claim. It was grinding. It was grueling. And the whole experience was very challenging for both of us in our own ways, but certainly for my boyfriend, who I'm certainly pleased to say survived.
Well definitely, I'm glad that he did, of course, but we'll definitely talk about some of that insurance stuff after your stories, because I think that's going to be a good takeaway, some of the do's and don'ts with regards to that. All right.
Totally.
Cool. Okay.
So it was a few years later when I arrived to a house-sitting job in the Caribbean that I personally learned what dengue fever is like.
Oh, no.
Now, the circumstances were, this is where things really went sideways, because I just finished the Ultimate Train Challenge. So I just finished a 30-day challenge whereby I rode 25,000 kilometers all by train from Lisbon to Saigon. Intense is the understatement of the century when it comes to describing travel experiences like that. Luckily, I did have a couple of weeks in Vietnam to decompress before I arrived in Grenada, in the Caribbean, where I was due to house sit. And my boyfriend at the time, different boyfriend, we'll call him the Swedish Squeeze. That's his name as far as the public are concerned. My Swedish Squeeze. I'd actually prior to the train challenge, we'd spent a little bit of time together in Europe before I headed down to Portugal, and he headed around to Sweden and Scandinavia visiting family and friends. And so, long story short, somewhere in Siberia, well, I was in Siberia. He was getting it on with an old friend of his in Denmark who happened to end up pregnant as a result of his adventures.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, said Swedish Squeeze, I didn't know this at the time, I arrive in Grenada, and I definitely feel something's going on. Like, I've got my spidey sense are tingling. I know something, he's distant. There's something weird going on. He's due to join me in a week in Grenada, where we're supposed to run off into the sunset together and, you know, house sit and travel the world and be happy. And I arrive at this idyllic place in Grenada, and I absolutely love it. So I get on the phone with him. I'm like, okay, listen, we got to clear the air. There's something going on. I don't know what it is, but if you have anything to share with me, share it with me now, because this place is paradise, and I want this place to be paradisical for us. And he said, oh, yeah, okay, well, here's the scoop. I just got this chick pregnant. I'm like, okay, so you're not coming. That solves that problem. Okay,
wow.
Great. And I hang up the phone with him. And I'm in a shock, of course. So what do you do when you're in shock? You go grocery shopping. So I do that. I get in the car and go to the supermarket because I had to. I just arrived in Grenada. I needed stuff. And somewhere around the cans of tuna in the grocery store, my vision blurs and darkens, my knees buckle, and I realize I'm in trouble. Something's going on. I have to get home right away. And so I abandon my cart. I get in the car. I race home, only to end up like horrifically ill for the next week. And
oh
what this was not only a good old case of heartbreak, but it was dengue fever as well.
Oh my gosh.
So for the next week, I cried, slept, and that was about it. Basically, I mean, I literally crawled from the bed to the bathroom and back. I couldn't eat. I could barely get enough water into me, and I was completely alone. And it was just like the heartbreak was like exaggerated. It was exemplified because I was alone and I couldn't even take care of myself. I couldn't even drive myself to the hospital, nor did I know the number of an emergency service, nor did I have a phone to even call emergency services. Like, I was messed up.
Oh my gosh.
Now, dengue fever, for those who are not familiar, is a mosquito-borne disease. You cannot be vaccinated for it, nor is there a cure. There are four strains of dengue fever. Two are considered good, and two are considered bad. My boyfriend, my ex-boyfriend, had the bad kind in Thailand. That was why he was in the hospital. I had the good kind, I think. But who's to know? Because I never made it to the hospital. The reason I knew it was dengue fever is there are a few things that happen during the course of suffering from this delightful disease that are fairly stereotypical. One of which is they call it the bone-breaking disease. So when you're in the latter stages of dengue fever, which lasts about a week, you literally feel like your bones are being broken. The soreness that comes from deep inside is like... There's no solution. There's no way through it. You just have to feel it. And then, well, if that's not enough, then you will break into a full body rash, which is even more delightful. So I got the bone breaking and the full body rash at the end of this, which is why I could then self-diagnose this as being dengue fever.
Oh my gosh.
Finally, literally at the latter stages of it, I probably was about 4 or 5 days in. The property that I was house sitting on, I had some neighbors that were not too far away. And I actually crawled over to them with money in hand and asked them to buy me some fruit. Please, please, can you buy me some fruit? They're like, what do you want? I'm like, I don't care. I just something. I need sustenance. And that feels like the right thing to have.
Oh my God.
So, you know, we were talking about this earlier. I don't do anything in small measures. And I really, this was it. This was the real deal. Not only that it was the piggybacking of a tropical disease on top of heartbreak. I do feel, though, like... by the end of this, I was kind of over them both. So, you know, all's well that ends well.
Oh my right? gosh. I don't even know what to say. Oh my gosh. How do
it's not that bad. See, I didn't go to the hospital. It's all good.
How do I even, okay. All right. Let's.
I feel the need to like downplay my story now. It's okay, Chris. I live.
It's okay.
It's gonna be fine.
Yes, I know. It's very scary. There's so much stuff. Okay, so
how do we unpack this?
Yes, how do we unpack this? Okay, this segment is brought to you by the book, How to Get Free Accommodation Around the World, by none other than Nora Dunn.
In all of my 12 years of traveling the world full-time, I saved over $100,000 on accommodation, and I had incredible, culturally immersive and rewarding experiences in so doing. I also stayed in beautiful spots around the world, so getting free accommodation does not mean sacrificing on style, and there's lots of different ways to do it, from volunteering to house-sitting to hospitality exchanges, living on boats, and home exchanges. In my book, I talk about all 5 different forms of free accommodation. I show you how to get gigs. I show you how to stand out and create profiles that will put you in demand. And if you happen to be running an online business, I talk about doing that concurrently to getting various forms of free accommodation, because some are definitely better than others in terms of getting free accommodation. It's in its third edition now, and all for the cost of a cheeseburger. You can learn all these different ways to get free accommodation, and it will pay for itself in less than one night on your next trip.
So how do you think you got it? Is it something that is you get it from mosquitoes, so yes, but I guess I should answer my own question.
So there actually is a little more of a science to it than that. There are specific types of mosquitoes that carry dengue fever, and you can identify them because they've got these kind of like black and white zebra stripes on their body. And they are particularly prevalent at dawn and dusk. Now, it's already been established by my boyfriend's experience in Thailand that dengue-carrying mosquitoes do exist in Southeast Asia. And, of course, I had just been in Vietnam, so there is a chance that that could be where I got it. But I feel like I got it in Grenada. Their dengue-carrying mosquitoes do also exist in Grenada, although certainly the woman who owns the house where I insisted she herself had suffered from dengue fever a couple of years prior, and she insisted that the dengue mosquitoes had made a mass exodus from Grenada, and that wouldn't have been what I had. But either way, whether it was Vietnam or Grenada where I got it, I definitely got it.
Okay, so if you got it, because what was the timeline between Vietnam and Grenada? Like, how much time was that before you were in that country and then in the other one?
About 22 hours.
Okay. So currently with the coronavirus, I mean, that can take like a minimum of 5 days before someone starts to show symptoms, I heard. So, I mean, no one knows for sure, but with coronavirus, but that's what I've been hearing. So in 22 hours, you know, yeah, for sure. You could have got bit in Vietnam and brought it there, but of course you could have gotten it in the Caribbean as well.
I kind of feel like it was the Caribbean, because I got I spent the first couple of days, I guess it was on day three that I got this, or day two, and I'd already made the prime mistake of hanging out at sunset on the and the property that I was at had a lot of grass, so they had these terrible biting sand flies, so I was covered in bites from them. And it just stands to reason. I was like next to a swamp. So, I mean, there were terrible biting things, you know, out all the time, but certainly at dusk, which is exactly when I was out. So it just feels logical that that was where I got it. And it feels poetic for me as well, because that was where I got my heart broken. So it just felt like that's just, you know, that's the way I roll.
Yeah, apparently. add the drama in there as well. But okay, and you said you were by swamps, and you know, mosquitoes like still not moving. What's it, still water? So yes. Not moving water. Yeah. I know there's a word that for
kind.
That, but I can't think of the word. There's a word for it when the water's not moving. Anyways. Okay. All right, so you said that you were inside the grocery store when you all of a sudden just felt black. So is that just how the fever hits you? Like, is that what happened to your ex at the time? Like, is it just, you're just one second you're normal, then the next second you're not? And then, actually, I know not to ask you two questions in a row, so I'll wait.
Because I never remember the second one.
Yes, so I'll wait for you to answer the first question, and then I'll ask you the second one. Okay, so off you go then.
You know what? That's a good question. I actually thought at the time, I thought it was the fever kind of taking effect. But with a little bit of perspective, I realized that was probably more just my body shutting down because of the emotional punch in the gut that I'd gotten from my Swedish squeeze. Because years later, I would experience something similar when I had a heartbreaking experience in South America. So, I can equate the, you know, my world darkening and my knees buckling to the emotional fallout that I was certainly at the time in Grenada unprepared for. The first sign of dengue fever, certainly for my boyfriend in Thailand, and for me shortly after getting back, is just an outrageous fever. And everything that comes along with a fever, you know, from dizziness and weakness and lack of appetite and hot, cold, sweats, everything and everything in between.
Right, right. Well, at least you didn't go from a Swedish squeeze to a Stockholm syndrome. So, thank you.
Very good.
Thank you very much. I'll be here all week. okay. So what do you think you could have done differently then? Because obviously you had the fever, but you chose to jump in a car and go home. So do you think that, do you think it would have been better to go to the hospital, or did you just not know where none of that stuff was? Because you were literally just got there. So what would you, in hindsight, and if you were able to, like, what would you have done? Because you didn't have, I think you said you didn't have a phone number. You didn't have the phone. You didn't have, any information. So what do you think you would have done differently, if anything, with regards to that? So, would you suggest people be prepared or know where the hospitals are? Or what would you have done differently in that situation?
I don't know that I actually would have done anything differently. I mean, like you said, I didn't know where the hospital was, and I didn't know what was happening to me to realize that I had a medical emergency on my hands. And like I said, as much as I felt like I was dying, I do realize that I still had the easy version of dengue fever. Anyone who has been hospitalized by it assured me 10 ways to Sunday that I couldn't have survived it on my own. So that tells me, I can only draw the conclusion that, all right, so I had the easy version. It was, and you know what, eventually I did do the right thing, which was I sought the help of a neighbor who was, unbeknownst to me, they had actually been checking on me, but I was usually in some stage of delirium or unconsciousness. I didn't realize that they'd been coming by. It was, and they were very kind and they became good friends after that. So, and dengue fever is one of those things that there is no cure anyway. So, and in a country like Grenada, unless you need to be put on fluids, intravenously, they're just going to send you home anyway.
Wow. Okay. So since there's no cure, oh my gosh, just so many questions. Okay. So with regards to your ex, right? What were some of the things that were different between his case and yours, because he obviously had a worse one? So let's answer that question first. Like, what are some of the differences? Because clearly you're saying that he wouldn't have, if he didn't end up in the hospital, he definitely wouldn't have survived. So what's some of the differences between what he had and what you had? And if there's no cure, how does that end? Does it just eventually leave your system and that's it? Or is he always prone to getting it again easier because it's still in his system? Like, how does that work?
So there is a certain degree of inoculation that you get once you've had it. Like I said, there were 4 strains of dengue fever. So once you've had one strain, you're not going to get that strain again. However, you are extra susceptible to getting the other 3 strains. So there's a, great, you're inoculated against one of them, but you got to be careful about the other 3.
Right.
Now, for him, I guess it also is worth noting, I've been courteously avoiding the topic, but you keep asking questions that are forcing me to lay all my cards on the table, which is that I don't,
oops.
I don't enjoy hospital experiences. I don't really think anybody does. But I also have a slightly pathological fear of needles. So if the diagnosis requires me to give blood, I have to be unconscious. So I was just like, it's not going to happen. I mean, again, I literally have to be unconscious for someone to get blood out of me. Whereas my boyfriend at the time was his first line, being in Canada, we have socialized healthcare. So for him, he's got sick a lot. I mean, I can't even begin to describe the accidents and illnesses he had suffered from. So for him, the first line of defense is always the ER. So that didn't work out so well for us when we were in Hawaii and he stubbed his toe and they thought it was broken and decided we had to go to the hospital for a $900 bill later. But in Thailand, In Thailand, it was, again, he said, I think I'm really sick. I need help. He was, again, he's thinking towards the hospital. By this point, I had learned that actually the first and best line of defense when you're traveling is a pharmacy. Because pharmacists are, they go through almost the equivalent amount of training and education as doctors. They're incredibly knowledgeable. And almost all technical pharmaceutical terms are in English. So most pharmacists have some decent command of the English language. And in many countries, things that we, with our North American mindsets, would assume are prescription are actually available over the counter. So it's those three factors for me. It's typically if I get sick anywhere in the world, the first place I'm going, or if I have some skin condition or whatever it is that needs medical attention, before going to a doctor, I go to a pharmacist. And I say, can you help me? And they will often give you things that, you know, again, that things that are may not even be available in the pharmacy, like they're not prescription, but they're not over the counter either, or they are over the counter, but they're behind the counter. I don't know. Under the counter? I don't know.
Over the counter, under the counter.
So
I get what you're saying.
So the first thing we did in Thailand was we went to the pharmacist. And she took one look at him and said, nope, hospital now. And luckily we had some friends. We just finished starting an international NGO by accident. That's another story. So we had friends, local friends, who took us to the perfect hospital for us. It was a hospital that dealt with foreigners and had the infrastructure in place and doctors that spoke English and whatnot to be able to help us. So he had a blood test done as an outpatient. And later that day got the call that he had dengue fever and he had to return to the hospital right away.
Okay.
Because they had identified his strain as the bad kind.
Okay, gotcha. Makes sense. Okay. So, and that's a really good tip because although you're traveling, I know in Europe specifically, when you're traveling, you might not necessarily know where the hospitals are, but for some reason you always tend to really know where the pharmacists are because they're highlighted by the green thimble. European country does it a little bit different, but it's still green and you still know it's a pharmacy.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how, you know, as you walk around the city, you'll notice them all over the place. Like how we do here in Canada, we could notice Rexall or Shoppers Drug Mart. But in Europe, you always will know there most likely will be a pharmacy down the street from you more likely than their hospital might be. So I think that is a very good point to actually go to the pharmacist first. And you're right. They are very knowledgeable. So that's a fantastic takeaway. So now let's talk about everybody's favorite insurance. Because they mean you well. So what should people do or not do? I don't know if you can make it quick or not, but because insurance is kind of like it's convoluted and it's complicated and every policy is corrupt. I mean, different. So what should you do and not do when it comes to insurance, when it comes to being sick in your situation? Because you said you learned a lot from that.
Absolutely. I'll definitely give you a couple of teasers, but I'm going to throw in another shameless plug here because on my website, theprofessionalhobo.com, I write about all of these kind of practical matters of travel, of arranging your affairs to travel and how to do your finances and ways to visit the ATM and reduce your fees and la, 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 la. And one of the things that I write a lot about is insurance. Because in a former life, I was a financial planner and that included insurance. So I actually know the lingo and know how to translate said legalese into English. Which is important. So I even have an article about travel insurance where I even break everything down with a glossary and I tell people how to structure their policies in a way that is conducive to them. But the first piece of advice that I always give is read your policy. You may lose the will to live somewhere in there, but read it. And make sure you know in and out and up and down what your policy is going to give you. Second of all, if you are in a position where you think you're going to need to make a claim, before you do anything, call the insurance company. Because you may, of your own volition, go to a doctor or a hospital that is not supported by the network that the insurance company works with, and they can deny your claim. So call them first, right. Let them know that something's up, or get somebody to call them for you, which is what I did for my boyfriend. third, once you are in the system and in a position where you are now making a claim, sometimes the bills will be paid directly, like the hospital will pay, the insurance company will pay your hospital bill for you. And in many other cases, you are in a position where you're going to need to be reimbursed for expenses that you have to pay for. And this is where it gets messy. Because, yeah, like you say, listen, they provide a service, but they don't make it easy.
Of course. So, they're not in the position of giving you money.
If you've ever watched the movie Memento, you'll know how dystopian it can get. And now anyone who hasn't seen the movie Memento is going to have to watch it. And I'm glad for that because it's an excellent movie. But you have to keep records of everything. And be explicit, and including make notes of the dates that you call in to the insurance company, who you talk to, what you spoke about. So keep a record of all of that, and then keep records of all your receipts and everything. And then when you file the claim, you're going to have to mail in your original receipts, but don't do that before making a copy of everything. So when I filed this claim in Thailand, we had a stack of receipts because not only was there the initial visit, the outpatient visit to take the blood, then there was the hospital bill, which was paid directly. But then there was all these other travel insurance related expenses that we were getting claims on because we already had tickets out of the country that we were stuck in the hospital, right? So we had to rebook that travel, and that's something that travel insurance policies will reimburse you for. We also had to extend our visas because the Thai visas had gone out. So we had to pay all kinds of fees to do that. Again, something travel insurance will reimburse you for. And in the end, I had a stack of receipts in different currencies and different, I mean, it was confusing to say the least. And all of these things, and basically what I did was because I'm ever the planner and, you know, a little bit particular about organizational matters, I had this collated booklet of receipts and documents and stuff that I sent into them. And I had the same thing at home. Now that saved, or where I was, and that saved my life because the insurance company consistently misfiled everything. They missed certain expenses and other expenses. You know, I had incurred an expense in Malaysian ringgit and they reimbursed me using Thai baht as the currency, which is like 10 times weaker currency. Like, so literally they gave me a check for 47 cents. And I was like, you know, I call in and I'm like, so yeah, you made a mistake on this check because it's for 47 cents. And this was a train from Thailand to Singapore. And it's supposed to be a Malaysian ringgit, which is, you know, $47 or whatever it was. Right. And they said, no, we didn't make a mistake. I'm like, okay, so turn to page 12D and yeah, move to the third paragraph down. Yeah, you see how that expense, that receipt says MYR? Yeah, that's Malaysian ringgit. Yeah, no, we did it right. So
my gosh.
The last piece of advice I can give you is escalate. Once you realize that they've either they're trying not to pay something because it's not in the terms when you know it is, or they've paid something back incorrectly, you're going to have to escalate it. And I had to escalate my claim many, many times. But the good news is I eventually did get everything back. I mean, I lost a few weeks of my life, but I got my $47. So, you know.
And so by escalate, you mean like go higher, like in the chain of command.
Yes. Okay, very kindly, very patiently say, you know, thank you very much for the help. I see that this is you're not going to be able to help me with this matter. Can I please speak to your supervisor?
Okay.
You know, and then just keep asking for the supervisor's supervisor. And eventually I made it to the top, actually, of the insurance company that I was working with.
Why am I not surprised? Because with Nora, it's go big or go home.
That's right.
Awesome. Oh my gosh. Such an incredible story. This is another good one for the books. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that story and all your wonderful tips. And just real quickly, where can people find you on the internet?
My online home is at theprofessionalhobo.com, where you will find links to all my other online homes.
Short and sweet. I like it. Thank you so much for coming on the show again.
Woohoo! Thank you very much.
All right, case closed. That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget that you can listen to this show over at www.travelhorrorstoriespodcast.com. And if you're listening on your mobile device, please take a second to give the episode a 5-star rating and leave a comment. It really helps the show and its episodes get discovered by more people. Plus, your feedback will help me tweak and change the show to make it the best show on the internet. Yes. Cheers.